Well, hello and welcome to the Mobility Podcast. I'm Greg Rogers with Securing America's Future Energy, and I'm joined with my co-hosts.
Pete Gould with Shared Mobility Strategies.
And Greg Rodriguez with Best Best in Krieger. Happy New Year, and as always, views are our own.
Great. Thank you to everyone for joining us today. It is the most wonderful time of the year, which is the Transportation Research Board annual meeting and Transportation Camp are coming up. And also CES was this week, so we had a whole bunch of press releases and flashy future of mobility things going on.
A lot of FOMO.
Yeah, a lot of FOMO.
Kind of.
BB&K, Greg, rather, is actually going to be having some things going on at TRB.
Sure. In my continuing effort to understand what data sharing actually is and some of the challenges and risks that come with data sharing, I'll be moderating a panel on Tuesday afternoon at TRB entitled Data Sharing and the Risks and Opportunities that Come with Data Sharing. And then on Wednesday, I'm excited to be participating in a Hill briefing with the UC Davis Three Revolutions folks. Discussing a policy brief and issue paper that I worked on with them. And the title of that is Federal, State, and Local Governments, Local Governance of Automated Vehicles. So just trying to think through, I think some of the things we'll be talking about today on, you know, where are the opportunities to learn from AV Start not moving forward, and how do we figure out that word collaboration when it comes to autonomous vehicles, and what roles do local governments play, regional authorities, states, and how do we figure out, you know, the federal regulatory framework with the uncertainty that comes with AV Start not passing?
Yeah,
there was a real missed opportunity in the title of that paper for, you know, for a good Ice Ice Baby reference to stop, collaborate.
There you go. I like it.
Pete is back with a brand new edition. Yeah. Great. I think that, just to really highlight one of the things that Greg brought up on collaboration, TRB sort of is really one of those areas where you get to see everyone in the transportation space. And all three of us will be around throughout TRB week. We'll be tweeting, I'm sure. And so if you're going to be around TRB, keep an eye out for us and come say hi.
Yeah. Or you can direct message us on Twitter at Mobility Podcast. Mm-hmm. And just let us know what you guys are if you want to meet up.
Yep. And also, Pete and I will be at Transportation Camp on Saturday. So if you're going to be there, keep an eye out for us there. Well, great. Let's get into it. So Ford made a big announcement at the beginning of this week that it would be going with Cellular V2X instead of DSRC for its connected vehicle technology. The interesting thing here is, and as many listeners probably know, the connected vehicle debate revolves around whether we should be going with dedicated short-range communications, or DSRC, which sort of acts like a Wi-Fi, right? And this was the spectrum was set aside in the 90s for this, and there's been a constant push and pull as to whether telecoms should be able to use this spectrum as well. And then what Ford went with, Cellular V2X, leverages cellular communications technology and is a little more robust, but not quite as proven. I think you guys would...
Yeah.
Agree with that assessment, but has a ton of opportunities for over-the-air updates and making and allowing for infotainment and transferring data a lot faster. And the interesting thing here is that Ford said CV2X will be standard in all its vehicles starting in 2022.
2022 is the new 2021, which means not right away, but maybe soon.
Right, which is probably why everyone will just start moving their AV deployment schedules to.
All of the 2017, we will have a fully autonomous vehicle by 2021, are now, we are going to have CV2X by 2022. But I thought one thing that was interesting, and this was great reporting by Politico Pro, by Tanya Snyder.
Friend of the pod.
Very good friend of the pod. Ford's... spokesman then on this in a Medium post also talked about saying that he hopes the move will, quote, spur others to potentially reassess and join them in rejecting. Like, it wasn't just a, hey, listen, we've made this decision. It was, we're going to try to rally the troops, which from a timing standpoint for the DSRC community is unhelpful, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, it's honestly herding cats. And the bigger problem here is that we need to make sure that whatever connected vehicle technology we use, it's got to be interoperable. Yeah. Your Ford should be able to talk to Toyota. Your Daimler should be able to talk to a GM vehicle. You can't really get the full effectiveness of CV technology for safety or even just for the traffic optimization with the vehicle infrastructure, unless we're all using the same protocol. It has to be at scale. And so I think the big question here is, do we think this shifts the dynamic? I mean, now we have GM and Toyota are going with DSRC. And then we have Ford and Daimler saying they'll go to cellular V2X. Do you guys think this is sort of the death knell for DSRC? Or do you think it's going to keep on dragging on for a few more years?
Go ahead, Ed.
I mean, I don't think it's a death knell, only because you still have a lot of investment with a connected vehicles pilot program that's being put forward by USDOT. So that work is still being done. And the interesting question around this is, I think, infrastructure. And so you already have the infrastructure in place for DSRC mm-hmm. in a few communities, and it's being experimented with. There's still a big question mark around 5G.
Yeah.
And from a regulatory standpoint, I think it's going to be fascinating. This isn't just a transportation issue, so this isn't just USDOT. This is when the FCC becomes involved, and right now we're already seeing rulemakings going on related to the placement of small cell antennas, and that's going on at the FCC. And so it's going to, I think, both sides are kind of digging in and laying down their kind of their wish list, mm-hmm. I think, around connected vehicles, but to me, it comes down to that word interoperability, and also what infrastructure is going to support the technology, and who's going to pay for it. Because that's always been a question, is, you know, a lot of companies don't want to wait for the cities to mm-hmm. install the technology. And if I were a company, I'd see the investment being made by telecommunication companies into 5G mm-hmm. and the placement of 5G in communities. That's all we're hearing about and expect to hear a lot mm-hmm. more in 2019. So why not ride that wave and potentially go with the technology where it's already going to be installed by somebody else?
Yeah, and I think that in terms of the death knell, I don't think it's a death knell, but I think one thing that makes it really unhelpful to the DSRC push is that it's happening right now, right as we're going into a new Congress that's mm-hmm. going to be looking at potentially an infrastructure bill, and we'll get into this later, and then reauthorization. You know, if had they gone the other way and said, you know what, we are all in, this is really happening, you've got X, Y, and Z, and you had all the automakers all lined up, and this is, mm-hmm. we're going, blah, blah, that makes a much stronger push to the authorizers to mm-hmm. take ITS and make it not this is something we're going to sprinkle right. $100 million on and be like, no, we're going to make this a big centerpiece of this investment, of this, whether it's the infrastructure package and or reauthorization. And I think that's where it really hurts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I want to jump into that. We'll be turning to Congress in a little bit, and I think that's a fascinating thread that we should absolutely be picking up. Let's turn to CES real quick before we do that. At CES on Monday, a new initiative was launched called the Partnership for Automated Vehicle Education, or PAVE. As in PAVE the Way, right. And this was an industry response and a nonprofit response to all the calls for more public education around AVs. And Secure America's Future Energy is part of it, as well as National Safety Council, Audi, Waymo actually joined. We had Zooks, AAA, an insurance company, Munich Re, INRIX, our good friend Avery Ash is from INRIX, and APTA as well. And so it was interesting as this was sort of formulated to look at what should AV education look like, and really looking at let's educate the public, let's educate policymakers, and let's also look at educating people through auto dealerships, because automakers don't actually interact with consumers at the point of sale. So just want to highlight that for folks. You can find out more about that at pavecampaign.org. What do you guys think is necessary on the education front for AVs? What do you think is needed?
I think that it depends on how it plays out. If we're talking a PR campaign that pretends that everything's ready to go and everything, blah, 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 that's great. I think that public, the demo days, Florida's been doing a ton of these with, SAE's doing mm-hmm. them too. Those are important. Having people see that both from the public acceptance side of things, mm-hmm.
to an extent, and the news coverage of these is helpful, but also to the more that you have actual developers interacting with the public, mm-hmm. to learn more about how they need to do it. I think that's definitely helpful, and I think that having this be part of a dialogue is going to be, I think, an important concept. I think a big part of the public education, you know, too, and which is the hardest part, is we can't break through the public kind of just dissonance that, like, yeah, 40,000 people die every year.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you see horror, you know, family killed by wrong way driver, you know, prom queen and valedictorian and right. two adorable children and, you know, and greatest, and it's just like, oh, that's awful. And there's no, we should act.
Right.
And which is tough. I mean, that's not on just the AV community, and the safety community's been at it forever, but, you know, how do we create, mm-hmm. or can we create the urgency that should be there? Mm-hmm. That I think that's an important part. But yeah, and I think that it's also, I think, really important too to be having, you know, you have the National Federation of the Blind, Council on Aging, making this also a big thing about, you know, we have a, you know, the baby boomers retiring. This is a real thing. Mm-hmm. That if anything, that could be where the, you know, the crisis that can be pointed is that you are increasingly going to have 70 plus year old large amounts of drivers on the road, and that when you look at the safety statistics, it is a hockey stick right at, you know, your early 70s on, mm-hmm. In terms of the risk of dying and rates of dying in accidents. That's where and that is a demographic issue now, mm-hmm. that I think is another focus area. But, you know, I think it is anything that is communicating the issue and the technology to the public is important. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think the only thing I would add is, you know, I know that Secretary Chow has said this is a duty that private industry needs to step up to, mm-hmm. and I kind of question whether or not this should actually be something that's being led by USDOT, mm-hmm. To make sure that we have coordination with local governments, who I've always seen as the best opportunity for, mm-hmm. doing public education. And I think that's why a lot of us are, you know, looking forward to seeing the potential pilot programs rolling out, because, mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of public education. And then the other thing that I'm really interested in is, you know, how do we get a better understanding of the technology? I think we're already seeing from some of the talk from CES is, how do we move away from the levels of automation and, yeah. get rid of 0 through 3, because that is not the type of highly automated vehicles that we've been talking about in the legislation and in the rulemakings, mm-hmm. and instead really talk about this level 4, level 5 vehicles, and getting, you know, a part of the education is hopefully getting the definitions right, so we're all, mm-hmm. using the same terms, which will be important as we start to see more ordinances and legislation around this. And for anyone listening that may be doing research on this, I think this is an important issue. Is anybody looking at, like, the psychology of promoting more shared mobility? Mm-hmm. And that, if anybody is doing that, I think we'd love to talk to you.
Absolutely.
Because I know we've talked with Susan Shaheen, and that's a big issue that we've been looking at, that they've been looking at from the shared mobility standpoint. But I think it's this psychology that I'm hopeful that maybe a younger generation will be more adaptive towards moving away from single occupancy vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Well, great. Let's turn to our favorite topic, Congress. So we have a new Congress.
First up on the agenda, reopen the government.
Reopen the government is the first priority.
There's so many freshmen right now who have never been a member of Congress while the government was open.
It's incredible. That's right. Yes, we have a shutdown right now, but let's say that the shutdown ends this year. there is discussion of having a infrastructure bill. Obviously, Peter DeFazio, who's the new chairman of House Transportation Infrastructure, and ranking member Sam Graves, have said that, like, this is a priority for them this year. And on the Senate side, there's sort of a similar appetite for an infrastructure bill. If you guys were to sit down with a piece of paper and write down what would be on your list, where would you start?
It's a good question. One of the big things that we keep hearing across the spectrum, mm-hmm. is that the number one issue is we have to figure out the pay for.
Yeah.
And I've kind of been beating this drum for a while, and my question is why? Why are we the only issue and the only sector in this town that is supposed to be fully self-funded and paid for, and mm-hmm. and we haven't been even kind of close since what, 2008?
Yeah,
when Safety Lou was designed to zero out the trust fund at the end of it, the question then becomes, there are many benefits to having your own firewall trust fund. Mm-hmm. You don't have to fight in appropriations battles, you versus, classrooms, mm-hmm. and all those other things. It provides certainty. All of these are in the theoretical, and all of those would be great if we had a user fee system that was providing adequate, if not additional revenue, so that mm-hmm. you had a fully funded thing. But again, we haven't had that in forever, and the political will is just not there, even to get it to cover what we need now.
Right, just raising the gas tax to cover what we have now.
To cover it, to make it through right. the end of the FAST Act, mm-hmm. much less to talk about a robust investment. And so that's one angle of it, is why are we the only ones in a low unemployment, high GDP, $1 trillion deficit mm-hmm. world? I'm kind of all for let's go in and get ours right now, and then when we're all figuring out the deficit in 3 years, that's when everyone can worry about it. The other part is that there's a important dynamic to where the money comes from to how it's then demanded it be spent.
Yeah.
And as a gas tax only, that you have transit that is kind of treated as if they're siphoning away money that I paid for this to fix my roads,
right.
And that almost that they are, it's kind of a social service that is being donated,
mm-hmm.
rather than this being a funding source and this is our investment. How do we want the system to look?
Right.
And you hear a lot about donor donees, like I put in X, I want to get in, I want to mm-hmm. get this much back. And it's why the DOTs, the focus is on we want to build more, spend more, invest more, meaning I want to widen this highway, it'll take 10 years, it'll cost $1.5 billion, and then within a year, it'll be congested traffic again.
Yeah.
I think that if you're taking general funds, that's income taxes. And if you want to then talk about fair distribution of from a geographic sense, then cities, transit agencies, bike ped, urban environments have a much better case to say we are not investing our money in the systems that should be going and where it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think part of me is likes this hybrid that we're kind of working in now. So I almost am in favor of trying to secure a large general fund investment at this point. Obviously, we need to find more dedicated revenues, but we've been talking about this my entire time in this city for long before I was here, and so let me know when that happens, but in the meantime let's start focusing on better investment in transit, and also demanding better, how do we have policies in place that address more than lane miles and levels of service and reducing congestion by expanding highways. Mm-hmm. That is, I think that in a longer term picture that we can start talking about how do we have better overall transportation and mobility and housing policies.
Right. And I think on that point, how do we efficiently use the highways we already have? How do we reduce single occupancy vehicles? I think there's big opportunity for this infrastructure bill to look at not only just automation and how that could help reduce congestion. I think that could certainly be something that should be studied and should be studied further by the federal government, but also looking at the market failures we currently have in moving people around, looking at how to improve public transit service, looking at how to pull more people to be public transit riders. Also electric vehicles. We saw a huge uptick in consumer demand for electric vehicles last year, and I think we're going to continue to see that. But our charging infrastructure needs to be built out, and we need to look at ways of building out more infrastructure and making people more comfortable with buying an electric vehicle.
Another thing I'll add is, I know that everybody's talking about raising the gas tax, and I think it's a short-term fix.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, it's a Band-Aid at this point, because to your point about electric vehicles,
mm-hmm.
as we start to hopefully have more electric vehicles come onto our roadways, then it already starts to continue to make the gas tax obsolete. Mm-hmm. And then as we hopefully start to see more shared mobility, more use of on-demand private transportation, in conjunction with public transportation, of course, but that, again, that takes people off the roads and people aren't going to the gas pump anymore. So to me, it's kind of like, you know, you're putting the bubble gum on the dam, it's just going to burst again. So I'm looking forward to hopefully more conversation around alternative fees for paying for transportation, whether it be user fees, to Pete's point about moving away from vehicle miles traveled, and instead myself, what sort of fee should be imposed on me to pay for the infrastructure that I'm using. Mm-hmm. And kind of thinking through the same way, if you have a water bill, you pay for all the infrastructure related to those water improvements, whether you like it or not. And I don't know how we get there, and that's probably where more discussions around MaaS or mobility as a service kind of come into all this, mm-hmm. where it's more of an individual using transportation and how you pay for your impacts on the system.
Yeah, I think there's also an interesting opportunity on that note for getting creative about how we're using tax incentives for transportation. Currently, I mean, if you're getting transportation benefits, it's usually parking. And so there are ways that we could look at modifying the code to say, well, if you're taking a shared Lyft or a shared Uber, or if you're using micromobility and you're not just riding a single occupancy vehicle, maybe you should be able to get those tax benefits as well, and they shouldn't be limited to parking.
And another big thing that I think we're seeing, you know, has always kind of been a conversation, but is increasingly, I think there's a new opportunity and a slightly a new urgency with all of the new mobility, whether even it's Uber Pool and Lyft Line, and scooters and shared bikes, and just general increases in biking within cities. And that's related to dedicated right-of-way and dedicated, yes. You know, which would go not only to bike lanes and all that, but I think the most important thing that we need to be, you know, when we talk about the AV future and heaven and hell and all that, if buses, which is the majority of transit in this country is bus, if they are sitting in the regular traffic, which is increasingly going to get worse, mm-hmm. Whether or not there's AVs, but I think especially with AVs, that if they are trying to compete with personal, you know, an Uber AV system, mm-hmm. While sitting in the same traffic, it's going to be significantly less convenient, less reliable, and moderately cheaper.
Right.
And that is just not a winning combination.
Right.
But I think what's important is that, and what's unfair to the transit agencies, is that for bus systems to work, the most important factor there is completely out of their control, and that is designing the streets and what do they have access to. And so it's their problem. It's not, they don't have the authority, and it's not their jurisdiction to solve it. And the people mm-hmm. who it is, like, that's your problem kind of is the thing. And I think that when we talk about BRT projects, it mm-hmm. becomes this large new start as if that's all on the transit agency to fund this dedicated right-of-way.
Right.
And the transit agency is applying for this transit funding for what is a smartly designed street.
Right.
I think that is one way where we start taking our federal, highway money, where a lot of main, streets within cities are a part of the interstate highway system, and those need to be started to be encouraged to have these dedicated right-of-ways so that is an investment on a smart street design for mobility. You know, the Federal Highway Administration is not about the Federal Single Occupancy Vehicle Administration. It is highways, and if those are a part of the highway system, they should be properly designed for moving the most people possible. And I think that is an important thing where we can make a massive investment in transit in America mm-hmm. that is not taking from the transit account or is not demanding that, you know, this is about investing more in transit. It's like, no, this is about designing our streets better.
Right, and that comes down to a question of there's funding in one bucket, and the other side is the actual authority to be changing the road designs, right? And usually that requires some interjurisdictional cooperation. And to zoom out, I guess we really don't have enough of a focus on regional authorities for transit planning. And transportation planning and redoing our roads. And I think that that's something that, you know, they tried to address in the FAST Act with some changes on the MPO consolidation. But I think there could be a renewed focus on regional governance and transportation.
And also we should probably staff up NHTSA and give them the resources and the
full FTEs and the, you know, funding that they need to be able to bring in the expertise to deal with these things like AVs and cybersecurity and all these other things that are so far out of their expertise that they need to be bringing on this to be able to effectively regulate these things. I think that's another important thing.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's totally out of their expertise, but to your point about resources, I think they need more staff.
Yeah.
And on
it's
that note...
It's a different agency mission now.
And on that note, I mean, there are a couple... We kind of skipped through this when we were talking about connected vehicles, but there are a couple interesting opportunities for comment that are out there, which goes to Pete's point about the people that are going to have to be reading all these comments. In addition to all the comments that came out on AV 3.0, then we had the comments that just were submitted on the proposed pilot programs. Now we have an opportunity for comment out of USDOT related to V2X communications, which is, you know, essentially vehicles to everything. Not only vehicle to vehicle, but also vehicle to infrastructure. So those comments, if I remember correctly, were published in the Federal Register on December 26th. So Merry Christmas to all of us that are working in this space. And so those comments are due within 30 days. I have no idea if the shutdown is going to impact those deadlines. And that's something that's, you know, a lot of people have been asking about. But so TBD, but as of right now, they're due 30 days from December 26th. Double check me on the publication date in the Federal Register. And then there's another interesting final rule that came out from USDOT right around the holidays, which was related to the publishing of applications for exemptions to the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. And so right now under the law, DOT does not publish an opportunity for comment until they've received a full application that doesn't have any deficiencies based on their determination. What this new final rule will do essentially says the moment that a company applies for it, even if USDOT hasn't done a comprehensive analysis on whether or not the application is complete, they're gonna move ahead and put out the opportunity for comment. So it's an interesting final rule that I encourage people to look at a little closer to figure out whether it is indeed accomplishing the intent of the law.
What's your take on it?
I'm going to hold back on that. I'm going to plead the fifth right now.
Use our own. Well, and the interesting part, I think what really led up to this is last January, GM requested an exemption from FMVS, Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, to take out steering wheels and brake pedals and other sort of human controls in their vehicles. And that just kind of, and there was a constant back and forth between GM and USDOT about this exemption. And it seemed like this was a response to requests from outside groups saying, how about, because DOT was saying this is not a complete application yet because we've never really dealt with something like this before. So I think it'll be interesting to see how this sort of changes or if it even improves the exemption process, I think.
Yeah, and I think it just kind of overarching theme that we've been talking about is how do we update regulations? How do we update processes to deal with these new technologies? I mean, I understand where the final rule is coming from, but it's still trying to peg these new applications into the existing FMVSS and the existing process related to vehicles. And here, we just have this new technology that we don't really know, you know, how it's going to be deployed and is it safe enough? And those are valid questions, and we don't want to hold up the innovation, but at the same time, we don't want to rubber stamp something that may not be safe and that may it being deployed too early or when it isn't safe enough or not in some sort of controlled condition prevents it from being fully deployed and us learning from it and being able to realize all the benefits. I think a lot of us are excited about autonomous vehicles. And just one more point, an interesting petition for waiver that's before the FCC was submitted by GM related to using an app while you're sitting in an autonomous car to essentially have a chat conversation should anything bad happen while you're in the car, should you have any service disruptions or things like that. And that's just an interesting thing that a lot of people are asking about. If we're sitting in an autonomous car, you can't necessarily tell a driver to stop or if you have an emergency. So how's that going to work? And how's that work when you're using wireless communication? So again, it shows this convergence between the transportation sector and the telecommunication sector. And so that's a petition for waiver that's out right now. Looks like the doc, it's GN docket number 15-178.
Cool, awesome. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap it up at, right? BB&K Greg, if people want to find you online, where are you on Twitter?
At Smarter Transpo.
And this is Pete. I am at Shared Mobility S.
Great. And this is Safe Greg. I'm at AV Greg R on Twitter. You can also follow us on Twitter at Mobility Podcast to keep up with us during TRB, and Transpo Camp. Thanks, everyone. Hope you all have a great TRB/Transpo Camp/whatever you're enjoying this month.